I'm John Batchelor with Professor Emily Wilson. Her new work is a translation into English iambic pentameter of the Iliad by Homer. And we're now looking at inside the story. We've been outside in the historical Troy. We've talked about the translations. Inside are characters that are vivid once you understand their relationships. I said this is like a novel. And Professor, because I think like a novelist sometimes, I've paired these characters for us to go through the dramatis persona. And most important that everybody hears about is Helen. Helen and Paris Alexander, the abduction of Paris. But Helen was also related to Menelaus. That was her husband back in Achaea. So the relationship of Paris and Helen, you obliged me in your note-taking to pay great attention to it. And it is a rough relationship. Helen is an ironic thinker when she's apart from Paris. What do we need to know about Paris? That fascinated me, that Helen understood him as her fate right now, but not forever.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, according to the legends, of course, Paris is not going to survive the Trojan War, and Helen's going to be married off to someone else before eventually rejoining her ex-husband Menelaus back in Sparta, which is where we find her in the Odyssey. Helen is an extraordinary character in the Iliad because she has this perspective on the whole sequence of events of which she's a part. We see her weaving, which is the common activity for elite women in the Homeric poems, is they're always weaving. But Helen's weaving is different because she's doing representational weaving of the sufferings of the Greeks and Trojans suffered for her and for her. And so she has this awareness that she's like a poet. She's weaving something which is like the Iliad itself. She also points out to Priam, her current father-in-law, who all the Greeks are. Priam seems to have not thought to find out who the enemy is for the last 9 years that they've been besieging the city. So all of a sudden, in book three of the Iliad, he asks, Helen, who are these guys? You must know them because, in fact, you spent the first part of your life in Greece. And so she explains them all. She has these storyteller qualities. But she also has, she's depicted as having no desire to go back to bed with Paris. And we also have this sequence where Paris is set up to fight a duel with Menelaus. So the two husbands of Paris are going to duke it out, and maybe that'd be a way to curtail this long war, which neither side really wants to continue because it's very bloody. And that duel doesn't succeed because Aphrodite, who adores Paris, scoops him up off the battlefield and then forces Helen to go to bed with him. Helen says, I don't want to go. I'm ashamed. I don't want to do this. And the goddess leads the way. It's one of those resonant, the mortal has very limited power compared to the immortal.
You note the gods just made an appearance. They're going to do that frequently as we go through the human, the mortal characters, the distinction, the deathless gods and the mortal characters. Another pairing, because I think like a novelist and you always look for the couples, is the tragic one. This is Hector, the great hero, the older brother of Paris, and Andromache, his wife, who has some great lines, heartbreaking lines.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful couple, and there were some wonderful scenes between them. I mean, you could have paired Hector and Paris as well, because, of course, they also have these exchanges where Hector bitterly says, Paris, you step it up. Don't just be looking pretty all the time, because Hector is the most dutiful of the Trojan warriors. He's both extremely pious and very much wants to fulfill the obligations of his society. And yet, his wife Andromache, in book six, we have this heartbreaking sequence in which she comes out to beg him not to go to fight Achilles out on the open plain, because she knows chances are Achilles is going to kill him. And he's the only family member she has left, apart from their little baby, who will, as she well knows, as we know, because we know the story, he'll be hurled from the city walls and die once Hector is dead, once the city falls. Andromache will be enslaved. She knows all that. She tells her husband, don't go. And he says, I have to go because I will be so ashamed if I don't fulfill the duty to go out and be the best warrior that my city expects.
That's an important detail you just introduced, because other males in the drama have it as well. He believes that he's compelled to put himself at extreme risk. Otherwise, his life is not going to be what it was before. He'll be ashamed of himself permanently.
So the pressure of the fear of shame and the desire to gain some kind of honor or glory, in the original, the term kleos comes up repeatedly. The idea of you're going to die, but you could get undying kleos. You could get fame that lives forever. That drives all of the warriors in different ways.
And another couple, Priam, the king, the leader of Troy, and Hecuba. I liked Hecuba. She doesn't have a big part, but when she said she was going to eat Achilles' liver, I said, well, I'm going to pay attention to her. Is she unusual as a Greek woman in Greek drama? Are there other Hecubas, because you've read so much?
Well, so there's a wonderful play by Euripides called Hecuba, and she also appears in Euripides' Trojan Women, and in both plays she's an amazing character. And once we get to early modern drama, as you know from Hamlet, we were talking about Hamlet a minute ago, what's Hecuba to me, or I to Hecuba, that I should weep for her? Hecuba is imagined as this sort of iconic tragic character because she has both infinite grief, all her children are killed, and also infinite capacity for rage, which is within the world of Homer extremely evil for a woman. This is a poem about both grief and rage, but most mortal women don't express rage, no matter what terrible things are done to them, because they have no capacity to get their own back. Whereas Hecuba imagines herself as, in a way, analogous to Hera, the queen of the gods, who also has this desire to eat her enemies raw. Hecuba and Priam, you said, is the leader of the Trojans, and yet he's weirdly not acting like a leader for most of the poem. He acts like a leader only insofar as he gathers his people together to grieve rather than to make military decisions. It seems to be Hector, his primary son, who has to pick up all those reins of military leadership, while Priam and Hecuba, we talked before about Andromache begging Hector not to go and lose his life, Priam and Hecuba do the same thing repeatedly, where we have the father and the mother begging the son not to go and die, and Hector refusing. And then we have those same characters welcoming Hector back after he's dead.
Yes, now there are female gods who are incredibly important for the plot and for the arguments that between the gods in Olympus, always arguing with Zeus, who seems both overpowerful and not all that sharp sometimes. But the goddesses are always sharpened, and yet they're blamed, if I read you correctly, they're blamed by the Greeks. Hera, Athena, Aphrodite, let's talk about Thetis, the sea god. She's Achilles' mother. She's extremely sympathetic because she worries about him because she knows he has a short life. That's her motive, and that's their relationship. She's I did not focus on her the first when I was 20 years old and read this the first time. Thetis, is she a character we find in Greek drama, the extremely sympathetic goddess?
I think Thetis is an amazing character in the Iliad. We don't have most of Greek drama, so it's hard to know. I mean, in extant Greek drama, we don't have a play that focuses on Thetis. There was an Aeschylus play, The Myrmidons, focused on the Achilles-Patroclus relationship by Aeschylus. And, you know, maybe she was a character in that, but since we only have a few lines from it, we can't tell. I mean, I think it's important to realize that the whole plot of the Iliad is framed around the prayer of Thetis. Thetis is the goddess who wants her mortal son, who she knows will have very few days on earth. She wants him at least to have undying glory. And the fact that within the quarrel, which launches the poem between Achilles and Agamemnon, that diminishes Achilles' glory. So he has a short portion of life and also, thanks to this quarrel, a diminution in honor. So he doesn't have a good serving of either one. There's supposed to be some compensation. And yet Thetis' prayer, which is answered by Zeus to ensure massive casualties on the Greek side in order to demonstrate that Achilles is the one that they need in order to make any headway against Hector, that prayer is answered, but it actually is any good. It results in horror for him and the increased shortening of his already very short life.
And Hera, if there is a protagonist in this story that you identify with, it's Hera. She's she's the wife of Zeus, but she regards Zeus as thick-headed. And somebody who can be fooled, and she's always bargaining with him, although at one point he threatens her, and she backs off. It reminded me of The Honeymooners with Jackie Gleason, when he would say to Alice, to the moon, Alice, to the moon, Alice. And Alice would back away. Now, is Hera meant to be comical? Is that a comedy character in Greek drama?
I don't think she's comical throughout the Iliad. I mean, again, we don't have enough sources to be able to tell you about throughout other Greek sources. But in the Iliad, she's comic sometimes, but she's not always comic. I mean, that bargaining scene in which Hera says, I want the total obliteration of Troy, and Zeus says, I want to hold it off a little bit, I'm not sure about this, and he sort of shilly-shallies, and Hera says, I need to have Troy obliterated, and they do a deal, and Zeus says, I'll give you something, let's trade this off, and Hera says, okay, then I will let you destroy three cities I love, and you can destroy this city that I love. And so there's this sense that even if it's comic on a divine level, it's not comic on a mortal level. And similarly, the funniest Hera-Zeus interaction is in book 14, where Hera takes up the weapons of Aphrodite, the weapons of seduction, and also takes up, in a way, the weapons of her strategic husband, Zeus, shows herself, as you say, much smarter than him and better at planning. And she manages to distract him from the battlefield temporarily by having sex with him. And that results in a Trojan massacre. It's funny insofar as we see Hera, you know, being all both sexy and clever, and that's fun. And it's fun to see the supposedly clever know-it-all Zeus getting outwitted by his cleverer wife. But it's not funny for Hector. It's not funny for all the Trojans who die very shortly after that. So I think we're constantly on the edge. But I mean, even when the Iliad is funny, which it very often is, it's not a laugh that you can sustain for very long.
I'm speaking with Professor Emily Wilson. Her new work is The Iliad in English, with notes, extensive notes. And we're going to turn to the one goddess I've not addressed immediately, because I imagine her being hissed every time she enters the stage. Her name is Aphrodite. Why is she hissed? What is the drama in Olympus we need to pay attention to?
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.